Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
You're doing great, Pat. Just one more hour left.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. During the break, I got a note from Warren, who's listening in Arizona. And the subject is fringe trend gaining momentum. Patrick, I've noticed with greater frequency, he sends a link to an article from the New Republic, anti-abortion movement, anti-Semitic conspiracy. And I had read that article a couple of days ago, I think it was. If it's the same article, I think it is. So he says at the root of the pro-life movement, the theory goes, at the root of the pro-life movement is anti-Semitism. And the Catholic Church / Christianity is driving the narrative. University professors are now commenting on the reasonableness and well-documented evidence. I'm concerned that just like gender ideology, they're laying a foundation for something, dot, dot, dot. What do you think? Well, I concur. They are indeed trying to fashion a narrative that is false, by the way. And that is that the pro-life movement as such is somehow now this is the latest set of accusations, that it is somehow now in the grip of anti-Semitism. And in articles like the one that you sent me, Warren, and others that I've been reading, I've been following this for months now, it is a growing theme that they're trying to portray the pro-life movement, whatever that may mean to you, as being a form of anti-Semitism. And they say stupid things like, well, Lila Rose with Live Action, I mean, she points out aspects of the abortion industry, and that's a subtle form of anti-Semitism. Or some of the abortion doctors who are just happen to be Jewish and they convert and wind up becoming pro-life, that somehow when you invoke that, that that's somehow anti-Semitism. It's not. So they take a lot of these real things and they impute to people like Lila Rose. They falsely impute to people like her an anti-Semitic motivation. There's a similar kind of kookiness that you'll see, and it doesn't have to do with the pro-life movement per se, but a similar kind of, beady-eyed, stubborn insistence that if you invoke George Soros as a funder of forces and organizations and movements that are contrary to good morals and, say, Catholic teaching, that if you even mention his name, they say you're somehow being anti-Semitic because George Soros is Jewish. As far as I know, I guess he is. I don't know. So they'll say that. So it's a way to try to impugn the pro-life movement as such. And they even say ridiculous things like, you know, the pro-life movement is not really pro-life. A lot of them, they will refer to themselves as whole life, in the sense that they want to emphasize other things that are very important, of course, like maternity care for mothers and their children, issues that relate to poverty and immigration and the death penalty and various other things, all of which are indeed very important and are life issues. We should freely grant that. But they scoff at the Catholic bishops who remind us that abortion is the preeminent moral issue of our day. They scoff at that. They sneer at that. They sneer and scoff at those who would say that there are some issues where you can have a prudential judgment, where, in other words, people of goodwill can arrive at different conclusions as to how best to deal with a problem, and that would be under the umbrella of, let's say, prudential judgment. And yet other things are intrinsically evil. They didn't know this until an article was written recently by a Catholic academic who attempted to say that this is a false dichotomy, and there really is no such thing as you can have prudential judgment in one area and other things are intrinsically evil. So some things like abortion, for example, you can't commit under any circumstances. And yet when it comes to the death penalty or immigration, you can use prudential judgment. That is certainly true. And I read the article that these people on the left are trying to invoke, and she doesn't make her case. I mean, it's a long article, lots of citations, lots of quotes from, you know, figures such as St. Thomas Aquinas and others. But ultimately, she doesn't make the case, in my view. And I don't in any way see that she has overthrown, let's say, the recognition that in some areas where it's not a matter of something being intrinsically evil, you can have a difference of opinion, and there are different ways to look at how to solve a problem. So all of the above, and this is just, you know, off the cuff, stream of consciousness, I do see what you're seeing, Warren. This has been going on for a while. And now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, they're all the more gearing up to try to discredit the pro-life movement and pro-life figures in the pro-life movement. So my advice would be, number one, hey, pro-lifers, don't be anti-Semitic, number one. And just whether you're pro-life or not, don't be anti-Semitic. It's a sin. It's wrong. It's an injustice. And we know where it leads. We've been down this road before. Arbeit macht frei. Work makes you free. That was the sign above the gate of Auschwitz. And so when all those Jews, the men, women, and children, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with the word Jew. Some people, they almost feel like it's a bad word, so they say Jewish people. Okay, Jewish people, that's fine. But they fear, I guess, that if they say the word Jew, somehow that's a bad word or it's derogatory. It's not. You listen to any Jews, go to the Hasidic communities in Brooklyn or elsewhere, they all talk about themselves as Jews. This is just the word for people in that religion. But in any case, we know where this leads to. It leads to Auschwitz. And so just from the standpoint of if you're a good person, and all the more so if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, who is Jewish, his mother Jewish, they were Jews. St. Paul was a Jew. St. Peter was a Jew. We should embrace the Jewish roots of the Catholic faith. Salvation comes from the Jews, as the Bible says. The point here is, don't be anti-Semitic. It's wrong. It's an injustice. It's a sin. It's a serious sin. And as I say, once again, we know where this serious sin often leads. So don't tolerate anti-Semitism. Don't tolerate racism, including, by the way, the racism that masquerades as anti-racism, where it's just a different group that you're being racist against, all under the supposed guise of being anti-racist. It's kind of like the fascists who call themselves anti-fascists, and yet they employ fascistic methods to silence and intimidate opponents, which is the essence of fascism. It's kind of like that. So my advice would be, as a way to further discredit this view that the anti-abortion movement, the pro-life movement, whatever you want to call it, is somehow really, it's just an engine of anti-Semitism and racism and all this other stuff. Discredit that false theory by don't being that way, and don't tolerate that, and speak out against it. Speak out against it. Denounce those horrible things and demonstrate by your actions, by what you say, what you post on social media, that you really are a true blue pro-life person insofar as you respect life, all life, and you want to protect it and preserve it. In other words, if this left-wing group is successful in fashioning a narrative that they're trying very hard to do right now, you can see it all over social media, and they're complaining and they're not happy that Roe versus Wade was overturned. Oh, they'll pay lip service to it, but they're, you know, they're still grumbling. It irks them that Roe versus Wade was overturned. And in their leftist fevered imaginations, demonizing and even to the point of dehumanizing their so-called opponents in the pro-life movement. They think that they are their enemies, I guess. It's crazy. But if you, we, all of us allow them to fashion this narrative and embed it in the consciousness of people, well, we know where that's going to go too. So stand up against it. If you spot it in your own life or in your circle of friends, denounce it, speak up against it. I'm not saying that we should run people out on a rail or anything like that. But I mean, if you've got somebody who's pro-life and also saying something that's anti-Semitic or racist, tell them, hey, stop that. That's a sin. You shouldn't do that. And I don't want to associate with people who are doing those kinds of things. I guess that's all I can say off the cuff. Again, this is all stream of consciousness. I just received your email a few moments ago. So those are my thoughts off the cuff. But I think you get what I'm saying. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Dominic in Chicago. Good morning, Dominic.
Morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call here today.
Sure.
And one quick point kind of on a side of what I called in about. I've also noticed that, you know, they're using, you know, this term of anti-Semitism really to stifle any form of dissent from the dominant narrative that's out there. Not just with the pro-life movement. So I just kind of wanted to say that. But I was really calling in regards to your Christmas wish of the coup in Russia, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I just kind of want to take a holistic approach to this where is Vlad Putin really the primary problem here, right? Is he the real boogeyman? And I say this because, and let me preface with, I'm not calling for his sainthood. And I'm also don't want to say that two wrongs make a right. Okay, but what I think we're dealing with is absolute war criminals on both sides. And I don't just mean Ukraine and Russia. I think we also have to take a look at NATO, which our government is the primary mover, you know, is really the engine and funder of NATO. Since the fall of the Soviet Union, by my count, the Soviet Union fell. The agreement was, hey, NATO's not going to move any closer to Russia. And that's a fair deal, right? If I'm Russia, that's exactly what I would want. Since that agreement was made, by my count, we have 13 NATO member nations that have been added, all of them closer to Russia. Two of them share a land border with Russia, and several others share a sea border with Russia.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the geopolitical lay of the land that you're describing. I, too, have studied it closely, so I'm aware of what you're saying.
So if I'm Russia, if I'm Vlad Putin, and now we have, you know, the West, who is really really trying to push. I mean, we the CIA, the U.S. government, NATO, so forth, was a primary mover behind the Maidan revolution, you know, color revolution that took place in Ukraine back in, 2014, right?
Right. Dominic, just if you, in the interest of time, I'm very familiar with all of these things. You don't need to explain them to me. But all of that being the case, what is the point you want to make? I'm interested in hearing it.
Well, so my question, Pat, would be, what would do a greater good here? Would it be a coup in Russia? Or would it be really a coup in the West? Who's causing more evil, more inequity, more violence in the world today, Russia or the West? In my personal estimation, it's the West, and it's not even close.
So you'd like a coup in the United States?
I wouldn't say necessarily, you know, a military coup in the United States, but I absolutely think that we need to change course, and I think you'd agree. I think a lot of listeners here to Relevant Radio, a lot of people we see in the pews, would find a lot more in common with some of the values that are being pushed in Eastern governments, but Russia in particular, values-wise, more morality-wise, than we find in our own home countries.
I've talked to some length about this issue, not per se with regard to a coup in Russia, which I very much would like to see, just because of the brink that we're moving up to with nuclear weapons. But I've talked about it, and maybe, I don't know if you've heard my commentary on this, but how dramatically since the, let's say since World War, let's just say since the 1960s, how dramatically reversed things have become, and all the more so with the fall of the Soviet Union, how this godless communist evil empire, as Ronald Reagan termed it, has turned in the other direction and has gone toward God and has worked very hard to eradicate, or at least to prevent from springing up, a lot of the social ills that we have in this country, gay rights, pride marches and things like that. Whereas the United States has turned and gone in the opposite direction and has become more and more godless and more secular. So I completely grant that as a phenomenon. I see it and I deplore it, at least in the case of the West. But what's happening right now in Ukraine, and this is why I had that little proviso where I said this doesn't, my position doesn't mean that I think that Volodymyr Zelensky is a saint, or that he, you know, doesn't necessarily have things that he should answer for. Nor do, am I saying that Ukraine is in itself, you know, the Maidan uprising that you referred to. It doesn't mean that things are good necessarily, or that they're as pure as the wind-driven snow. But it doesn't negate the fact that Russia has pulverized this country, killed countless people, not to mention its own men under arms who are dying left and right. The suffering that is being inflicted now on this country with regard to the pulverization of its infrastructure for something as simple as electricity and heat, these people are going to really suffer. They're already suffering. They're going to suffer even more. The families that have been displaced, the people who have had to leave. I mean, it's such a big mess, and it's being driven by your friend, Vlad Putin. He's the guy pushing the buttons. He's the one who's saying, let's do this. And he's got a cadre of people who think like he does. But as far as I'm concerned, it has to stop. And we can only really start working on some of these other problems if we don't have a war with people dying and missiles flying. So yes, I absolutely want to see Vladimir Putin removed from power. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'd like to see it. So at least the Russians who are sane and don't want this insanity would say, well, enough of that. We're going to back away from the abyss. And I think only then would we have any kind of a fighting chance, if you'll excuse the pun, of rectifying some of these problems. And then lastly, and I'll give you the last word on this, Dominic. Lastly, I would say that we have to look beyond our own political idiosyncrasies. And, you know, Donald Trump and Joe Biden and Democrat Party and Republican Party and all of this suspicion and anger and fear that is driving people's emotions and their attitudes towards things like Russia. Well, if, you know, if Joe Biden's against Russia, then we better be on Russia's side. Or if Donald Trump is this, then we better be on the opposite side of that. A part of the phenomenon that we're witnessing, I do believe, Dominic, is that people are not seeing things clearly because of our own internal political turmoil and how that has distorted people's understanding of things like what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. And therefore, they are sympathetic to Vladimir Putin and Russia because they're sympathetic to Donald Trump. Or they're hostile to Russia because Joe Biden is hostile to Russia. Things like that. We have to look beyond those things and not allow our vision of these realities to become distorted. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Dominic, you raised a very good question. I'll leave you with the final word on this.
I mean, I would agree with that distortion. I wouldn't say that that's how I'm looking at it here. You know, I'm trying to look at this really just on a surface level. I mean, with that being said, you know, I just don't see Vladimir Putin as shouldering an equal amount of the culpability here. I think that, in my opinion, Ukraine has become the sacrificial lamb of the West. I think that we essentially have push them to their destruction, and, you know, brought in a guy like Zelensky, who is now pushing to outlaw or censor the church in Ukraine, right? That came out last week. So
yeah, but even so, I guess I did promise you the last word, but I do have to take a break. Even so, all those other things notwithstanding, it doesn't make room for, it doesn't legitimize what Russia is doing in Ukraine. Even if Ukraine has terrible things, it doesn't legitimize what Russia is doing. And even the geopolitical, well, we don't want NATO on our border. There are other ways that we could resolve that problem. But I have to leave it at that, Dominic. Thank you. I really appreciate you raising this issue. It's something I normally don't talk about, but it's fair game. Thank you.
So Ukraine is a country in Europe. It exists next to another country called Russia. Russia is a bigger country. Russia is a powerful country. Russia decided to invade a smaller country called Ukraine. So basically, that's wrong.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Well, the left is hyperventilating again. They always have to have something to hyperventilate about and stamp their little feet and throw their little tantrums. This time, the tantrum of the day now is because Elon Musk has basically shadow banned this kid who's got, he's a young teenager, I guess. He's got a tracking algorithm or whatever that tracks the movements of Elon Musk's private jet and posts it publicly. It's called Elon Jet. If you're interested, that's the account on Twitter. And so Elon Musk is like, I don't want you to do that. So he's severely limited that account's visibility. And so they're hyperventilating about how, oh, he's such a hypocrite and he wants more transparency, but not for himself because he doesn't want his private. I have a solution. Not for the left, but I have a solution, Elon. Just get a different jet. Get a different jet. Get a different jet. Don't register it in your name. You can do it. You've got the money. You bought Twitter. There are ways around this. Problem solved. Tomorrow it'll be a different tantrum on a different topic, but that's what it is right now. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Ale now in Cape May, New Jersey. Hello, Ale.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. My wife and I sat and watched Father Stu last night, and it was one of the most moving movies I've seen on Catholicism. It was just wonderful. Anyway, so I was thinking, how do you go about the sainthood or blessedhood? Like, if I wanted to, or my wife wanted to start praying to Father Stu for intervention for certain maladies, is that proper?
Well, there's a process that the church follows, and so if his cause for canonization were opened, and I'm not aware that it has been, but if it was opened, the preliminary stage would be he would be referred to as the servant of God. And it wouldn't, strictly speaking, be appropriate to pray to him or to ask him to pray for you because we wouldn't know if he's in heaven yet. He might be. Maybe he's not. Who knows? Only God knows. So the church is careful not to suggest that we invoke his intercession until he reaches venerable. That's the next step, the venerable. And usually at that point in the cause for canonization is when the church says, okay, we have strong reason to believe that he is in heaven. So yes, go ahead and ask him to intercede in some miraculous way, because that would lead then to the step of beatification, which requires a miracle. And the miracle is something that is sought by way of intercession. So when this person is declared venerable, the church says it is appropriate now to ask this person in your prayers to intervene, to pray to the Lord, to work a miracle. When the miracle happens, if it does, then the person would be beatified. And that's a step just below canonization, for which another miracle is also required. So to answer your question, Al, in terms of like, is it appropriate, if you're looking at that process, it's not really appropriate or encouraged until the person has been declared venerable. At that point, it becomes appropriate in terms of the process.
I appreciate that, because then it is something you have to be in contact with the church's, I guess, list of venerables in that manner.
Well, yes. I mean, you can. That's a good question. I'm not sure where such a list would be found. Maybe there is one. But it doesn't mean that you can't ask, say, him for prayer. But it's with the assumption built in that, well, I realize you may not be in heaven yet. So if you're in purgatory, you need my prayers. But if you're in heaven, then I would like your prayers. So you can approach it that way. But once we know with evidence to back it up, not just the investigation into the person's life, are there signs, evidence of heroic virtue? Did the person die as a martyr? He didn't, of course. All of those things that go into it, as well as the miracles, when those happen, then you know you're on solid ground, because then you know this person is in heaven and this person can pray for us.
Well, at any rate, it was one of the most moving movies I have ever seen, and it did touch my wife and I. And if you're ever in Cape May, which is a most wonderful place on earth, we have a great Mariner Center that we are part of, and they do such wonderful things. So we would like to invite you there.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. As it happens, Al, I have visited Cape May in many of my visits to New Jersey, especially South New Jersey, to do public speaking. So a lot of the parishes in that Vineland and is it Pennsville? Is there a St. Robert's in Pennsville, New Jersey? Does that sound familiar?
Yes, there is, and they have a wonderful prayer meeting every Thursday, I think.
Yeah, I've had the privilege to speak at many of the parishes in South Jersey.
Wow.
So over the years, going back more than 35 years now, I've had a chance to do that. So I would relish an opportunity to visit, but my public speaking days, I've retired from that. So I don't know how likely it is, but if ever I'm in your area, I'll drop by.
Mariner Center, Cape May Point is a wonderful, magical place that does wonderful things for the church. All right, thank you. Have a wonderful Christmas.
Yeah, thanks, Al. You too. You and yours. 888-914-9149. Here's a note that comes in from Anonymous, listening in California. I'm a longtime listener to your show, and I listen to you with every moment I get. Thanks for that. I was wondering if watching kissing scenes and sexy parts of movies is okay. If I were to watch those parts in movies or shows, am I committing a mortal or venial sin? Well, this is an interesting question. I don't know that I have the answer for you, but I can say a few things. Number one, and by the way, parents, if this is not age appropriate for your little ones, then turn the radio down for a few minutes maybe, or shoo them into the other room if necessary. Cyrus, what's the magic formula? Ready, steady, go. Fair warning. You won't even do the work anymore. All you'll do is press a button.
I have all these buttons.
Yes, I know. You press Patrick Madrid's buttons. That's your job description, isn't it? All right, so here goes. Fair warning, ready, steady, go. Obviously, if you are watching a movie or a show in which an act of immorality is taking place, you shouldn't watch it. And the more revealing it is, all the more reason why you shouldn't watch it, because you don't have the right to gaze upon other people in that context. Now, if you are a married man or a married woman, you have that right with your husband or your wife. You don't have that right with anyone else. So naturally, you want to avoid looking at anything like that, because first of all, you don't have the right to do that. Second of all, is that it will inflame your imagination and can be the occasion of sin, the near occasion of sin. And these things being what they are, and the human drive for sexual pleasure being as strong as it is, it doesn't take much for most people to start moving in that direction. So you could easily commit a serious sin if you were to intentionally feast your eyes on things like that that you know you shouldn't be looking at. And the more grave matter it is, the more serious it would be. Now, on the other hand, one of the things that I would recommend is, as you're watching a movie, especially if you're a mature adult and you are not in the near occasion of sin, and you have control over your passions, or at least you have good control, it may not at all be sinful for you under certain circumstances. If your children are there and you're allowing them to see something, that would be a sin. You don't want to injure their innocence. But if you're seeing something that is not gravely wrong, in other words, you're not witnessing something that is seriously wrong, but maybe it's alluding to it, or maybe it's suggesting something, no, I don't think that would be a serious sin. And the game changer for me has always been the remote control fast forward button. So when Nancy and I watch a movie or we see a show, if something like that seems to be about to happen, we just simply fast forward it so that we don't have to worry about, well, we're watching something that we really shouldn't be watching. So that's how we handle it. And I encourage you to exercise that as part of when you watch a movie so that you don't suddenly find yourself at a crossroads where you're saying, oh my gosh, this is happening. I've already seen enough of this now. Now, if you're caught by surprise and something's happening and you weren't expecting it and you're not relishing it or anything like that, and you say, oh, well, I wish I hadn't seen that, that's not a sin. But if that part of the movie comes on and you're saying, I'm going to watch this, I'm going to enjoy this, I'm going to think about this, and I'll probably think about it later on too, yeah, that would be a sin because you're now enjoying something that is not for you. I'll leave it at that. Hope it's helpful. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Tina in Long Beach. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that the gentleman, God bless him, I'm sure he's a very nice man. He wants to pray to Father, that priest that the movie about movie was made about.
Yeah.
So why would anyone want to pray? We don't know anything about that man, that priest, personal, private, secret life. He, you know, in the movie, he's depicted in one way. We don't know what he was like or what he did. He hasn't been investigated or what. When we have so many saints, you know, Saint Augustine, others who were, you know, books have been written about and have been investigated and who lived, people knew, and to want to pray to a man that we really only know a movie. I mean, they can say anything in a movie. So I'm surprised.
Let me play devil's advocate, if I may. I haven't seen the movie, by the way. In fact, when I was, where was I? I was in Helena, Montana. Shout out to all my friends in Helena, Montana. Rose Casey, foremost among them. And that's where Father Stu lived. That was his hometown. And so the people there know a lot about him. Let me tell you, they know a lot about him because they had a long association with him. Some of them knew him personally. There's no lack of people sharing their reminiscences of this priest and what he did and what he was like and what he said and how he was. So there is a great deal that is known about him, but I do grant the fact that, at least as far as I know anyway, the church has not undertaken the kind of investigation into his life that it would and does do in the case of somebody whose cause for canonization has been opened. Now, if a cause has been opened for him, I'm just unaware of it. That's just my ignorance speaking. But I'm not aware that it has been. So I think you're right insofar, Tina, as we should be cautious. This is one of the, one of the really dangerous things about what seems to be happening now in the Catholic Church in, let's say, the last 20 years or so, and that is this haste, this undue haste to canonize people, saints, very quickly and apparently for no good reason. And I'm thinking about figures like, say, Saint Paul VI, Pope Paul VI. He was not known in his lifetime for being a saintly man. I mean, I'm not saying he was a bad man. I'm not saying that he was in any way bad, but he was not known. He didn't have a reputation for being super holy, let's say like St. Padre Pio did or Mother Teresa did. And everything I've read about him, there's very, very little there that would convince me that he lived a life of heroic sanctity. I'm not impugning his character at all, because I'm just saying that here's an example of where in the church's rush to canonize some of these saints, it seems to me that it could be a real problem down the road if things do come out later, and God forbid that they do, and I have no reason to think that in his case anything will, but let's just say in theory. This is why it's so much better to take a long time, take a few hundred years even, before somebody is canonized as a saint. Be rigorous and thorough and not hasty in trying to declare people saints, because it's inappropriate. And also, we don't want surprises of the unpleasant variety to come out later. Oops, made a mistake there. That wouldn't be good. So in the case of Father Stu, about whom I know virtually nothing other than what I've heard from the people who knew him, I haven't seen the movie, I concur with you that we shouldn't make a saint out of him before the church does, if the church ever does. In the meantime, I think that the best thing to do is pray for his soul. He died. He could be in heaven. He could be in purgatory. And if he's in purgatory, I guarantee he wants our prayers. So rather than, you know, kind of a folk canonization, we should, like any other person who has died, we should pray for him. Honor his memory,
May I give an example of just one
of what?
Real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Just to say, what if this man was a pornography watcher secretly? And nobody know, you know, and he and the people who knew him, like you say, the people who knew him lived around him, and they didn't know that about him. And so, and we're going to be praying to him. I don't know. I didn't see the movie. I know nothing about it. But what if he did secret things that people don't know?
See, Tina, that's my point. That's exactly my point. We should not be hasty in canonizing somebody before that kind of rigorous investigation has been undertaken. Anything's possible. So I appreciate your thoughts. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find out more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Interesting music. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, by the way, just talking about that Father Stu movie, one of the rough edges was all the F-bombs. And I guess that's how, in real life, I guess that's how he talked before he had his conversion. But that was off-putting for a lot of people. Like, I don't want to sit through and hear all those F-bombs. So I understand that they're doing a director's cut version of the movie that will have all of that taken out.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I heard it went from 90 minutes to 15 minutes.
I don't think there were that many F-bombs.
I have not seen it, but I'm interested.
It's being expurgated, so that's a good thing. You know, even if somebody did talk that way before his conversion, I don't need to hear it. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Let's go to...
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, you sounded like you wanted to say something and now you're thinking better of it.
Well, I don't want to get in trouble, but I mean, I grew up, my mom talked like a sailor truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I have become desensitized to it, where mm-hmm. I don't even hear it. So what will happen is I'll often recommend a movie only later to think, oh, why did I recommend that movie? The person I recommend it to, they're going to be offended by what's in the movie, where it has no impact on me. I don't, and I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just, that's, this is just
it's
the
just
way
a
it
thing.
Is.
Yep. You've been desensitized,
I have.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You know, that's between you and God.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of.
No heat, no judgment, as I like to say. Thank you. Let's go to John in Pittsburgh. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Have you ever heard of Pascal's Wager?
Yeah, sure. It's a big deal.
Okay. I just came across it recently, and I think it's a pretty good, powerful, simplistic mathematical theorem that can convince non-believers that there is a God. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I agree. Yeah, so he himself was a mathematician, 17th century polymath. So he did everything. He was philosophy, theology, math, science, physics, you name it. He was into it. Very sharp guy. And for those who are not familiar with...
I think he invented the calculator and the syringe, supposedly. So.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Great guy.
Yeah, that's new to me, but I'm not surprised to hear that. So why don't I, John, for the sake of those who may not know what Pascal's Wager is, let me explain it to them so they understand what you're talking about. But the answer to your question is, yeah, it's a brilliant way of demonstrating the reasonableness of believing in God. And here's what the wager goes like. He says, if you were going to wager in any way, money or whatever, he said, you have to look at the question of God's existence this way. If you wager that God does not exist and you're right, then hey, great, you're going to have 70 years, maybe a little bit more, of fun and all kinds of enjoyable, pleasurable things, and then this life is over and you die and that's it. There's no afterlife. You've won, so to speak, because you had a life filled with pleasure, and you're not going to get punished for anything because there is no God. So if you wager that God doesn't exist and you win, that's what you win. He says, on the other hand, though, if you wager, and you don't lose anything also, by the way, you don't really lose anything because you don't get punished because there is no afterlife, because there is no God. He says, if, however, you wager that God doesn't exist and you lose, because guess what? He does exist, then you lose everything. So you had your fun in the sun, you had your pleasure, and then you die, and then you go to hell. So if you wager that God does not exist, what you win is very small by compared to what you stand to lose if God does exist. Now, on the other hand, if you wager that God does exist and you do believe in him on the basis of believing that he does exist, and you lose because he doesn't exist, as it turns out, well, what have you lost? Nothing. You haven't lost anything. Maybe you didn't have as much pleasure in your life, but you were a good person. You were moral. You were virtuous. People respected you. You left a nice legacy. And then you go into the grave, and there's no more you because there's no afterlife, because there's no God. You wagered and lost. You really didn't lose much of anything. But if you wager that God exists and you're right, you win everything. You win big. You win eternity, happiness forever and ever, amen. So the point of Pascal's wager is to show that the smart money, even if you just want to look at it from like the odds standpoint, what are the odds and what do I stand to gain, what do I stand to lose? He says the smart person is going to wager that God exists, because if he's right, he wins big and he loses nothing if he's wrong, whereas the person who wagers that God doesn't exist loses big and really stands to gain very little if he's right, that God doesn't exist. So that's Pascal's wager in a nutshell. So back to you, John. How did you react to that when you first read it?
When I first read it, when I first read about it, I was bordering on agnostic. So it convinced me.
Mm-hmm.
It persuaded me to believe and
awesome.
To try to live the right way. So I think it's a powerful, logic.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, and I'm not surprised because he was super smart. Smarter than me, anyway.
You know, one, one, smarter than all of us. One quick question before I go, because I probably, you know, it's hard to get a hold of it. But have you ever seen the movie Fatima, the 2020 version of it that was made in Portugal?
I did. I did see it. I like to watch those movies, and I did see it. What about it?
Well, I liked it. I thought it was well-produced and well-acted. But the question I have is, do you think it was accurate, the visions that they portrayed in the movie?
Yeah, I didn't. That's one thing I didn't care for in the movie. There were two things that I didn't care for. The first one was the way they portrayed the Blessed Virgin Mary. They wanted to make her look more realistic and less ethereal, less mystical. So she's barefoot, uh-huh, standing on the ground. But that's not how the children saw her. She was above the holm oak tree. She was in the air above that. And I don't remember. I don't think she was barefoot. But I thought that was a departure from the authentic story that I didn't think was helpful. The other thing was this, John. It might surprise you. The beautiful young actress who played Lucia was too beautiful. She was distractingly beautiful, I found. Uh-huh. And Lucia was not beautiful. Yeah, Lucia was a rather homely girl. And I don't say that in any way to be disrespectful, but she was a rather homely girl. And she was not, you know, a head turner. And she was also much younger than the girl who portrayed her in the movie was. The girl who portrayed her in the movie looked like she was like 17 or 18 years old. And very pretty, and that was also an historical inaccuracy. So I thought that could have been done differently, which is not to take away from that actress. She did a great job, and she's a good actress, but I think she was miscast for that part.
Okay, yeah, you're probably right. I just wanted to get your opinion on that movie. I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, I did too. I did too.
You know, so. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you. One, what was it? The 13th Day, I think it was another movie that came out within the last 8 or 10 years, also about Fatima. And I thought that the treatment of the miracle of the sun was very riveting, as I did with the more recent Fatima movie. I thought that was very riveting. Of course, that's the high point of the whole story is what happened on October 13th, 1917 with the miracle of the sun. So I avidly watch those movies. I do enjoy them. Let's go to Heidi now in Milwaukee. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Patrick. Hey, I have a question. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can recommend a streaming service. We've been with Disney for years, but I don't want to give my money to support an organization that promotes values that are opposed to the Catholic Church's teaching.
Right.
And I just feel like they're doing more and more promoting values. Is there an equivalent out there that might exist where we could, where I could feel comfortable spending my money?
I think so. The one I'm aware of is called PureFlix, and that is pureflix.com. And although, of course, it's got lots of really good family-friendly fare, it's not as big as like the really big streaming platform. So you won't find as much variety, but there's a lot of good stuff there. And that particular platform is known for only having material like that. They wouldn't have anything that would be problematic for kids or, you know, for you to watch. PureFlix is called.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm happy to make that recommendation only because I know that what they're doing is kind of the opposite of what Disney's doing. So I hope they thrive. Thank you, Heidi. Appreciate that. Let's go to Leah in San Francisco. Leah, we only have about a minute, so we'll have to be quick. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Did the Jew wrote the New Testament?
Well, many Jews wrote books in the New Testament. Some of them were Gentiles, though. So like St. Luke, who wrote the Gospel of Luke and Acts, he was a Gentile, from what we know. But most all the rest of them were Jews. That's true.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Nice chatting with you. That was easy. Perfect timing. And we'll be right back at it 21 hours from now. I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.